The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You have to be strong in today's world.
Strong.
Keep your focus, stand up.
Stand up.
What you believe in, how to achieve all your dreams.
Hey.
Keep moving forward. Never accept less than who you are. Live your best life.
Hey.
Be strong and free. It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
The Hit Back with Nahasha Black is sponsored by Scotiabank, Baja Retreat and Spa, J.S. Johnson, and Central Bank.
Good afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome to The Hit Back. I'm your host, Nahasha Black. It is a beautiful day here in the 242. I hope that you are doing well, taking care of yourself, and living your best life. All right, so we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. I'm looking forward to it. If you're trying to follow us online right now, we're having some internet challenges, so we will try to get back up online, and you can watch the show from there. But we, of course, are never denied an opportunity to be on air. Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, number one radio talk radio station in the country. So it's good to have everybody on air. Yesterday was a huge show. I got a lot of reviews, positive feedback from the show with Dr. Shankara Chetty. And we will be discussing those protocols that he spoke about with Dr. Kevin Bethel, who's in Grand Bahama, been doing some great work of his own. And, of course, our resident doctor here on the show, Dr. Susan Williams Lockhart. So we'll be having that discussion on what they thought about the show yesterday. Plus, I want to get your feedback on what you thought of the show yesterday. I think that we definitely saw and heard some really game-changing things. And if you go online, you can always check him out yourself and see that he has, you know, his protocols have been studied. Articles that have been put out there that folks are using, and we know that doctors in India are using his protocols with much success. Doctors in South Africa. So the question is, now how do we make those protocols work for us? Can we be a trial, et cetera? So those are questions that we will have to have asked and answered, and hopefully get those who are higher up to just review it and determine what's best for them. But that's coming up at 5 o'clock. What we have starting up out on the show, though, is that we have Minister of State from the Office of the Prime Minister, in the Office of the Prime Minister, Minister of State Miles Larota. He's also responsible for the Business of National Insurance Board, and as well as the Ministry of Disaster Recovery and Preparedness. And so I want to welcome on newly minted Minister of State, Minister Miles Larota. Minister Larota, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nahasha. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for saying yes to the interview and joining us on the show here today, and for being flexible. You know, I know the technical challenges, and just like that, you made the adjustments. So I appreciate that as well.
No problem.
Minister Larota, first of all, congratulations on your appointments. You know, I know your plate is heavy. You got a lot of jobs now. And so, first of all, you have these two, which we consider substantial portfolios before you as Minister of State.
Mm-hmm.
Minister of State dealing with national insurance, which is very much a always a heavy or weighty ministry or department, or I say portfolio. Then you have disaster preparedness and recovery, which is newly minted under the former administration and has some levels of expectation. Let me ask you this on a personal level. What do you see as your mandate, your job in these two portfolios that you've been given as the new Minister of State for this area?
Well, I'll take the National Insurance Board first. Not that I'm minimizing what happened to our neighbors to the north, islands of Abaco and Grand Bahama. But, you know, since the pandemic, there has been financial repercussions across the world. The Bahamas is not exempt from that. We had an economy that was almost shut down with very minimal economic activity for a while. and the government was responsible for providing some financial relief to the many people that were affected by the pandemic. And so up to, I think, last month, there were still 20,000 people who were collecting, you know, the unemployment benefits. I think that was to the tune of around $14.3 million for the month of September. And so when you look at less people working and more monies coming out, that has put a severe financial strain and pressure on the National Insurance Board. That being said, the government has made a decision that in the interim that there would be an extension of this program, and so that the public could expect relief for the next probably 3 months, with a view of reviewing after that period or during that period on where the government would go with regards to financial assistance. You know, we are already in the month of October, mid-October. Mm-hmm. You know, Christmas is about 2 months away. Mm-hmm. And so the interim decision of the government was to continue with the extension of the assistance that's being provided.
And let me ask you this. Sorry. The question I have then is, we talk about the extension of the food assistance program, which we understand is vital, right? Mm-hmm. We understand that folks need that level of assistance. So then it would bring to me the next question, though. The question that would fall in line with that extension is the health, the fiduciary health of the National Insurance Board, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. We're not necessarily contributing the way we used to in a robust economy, or just
right.
in, my God, anything similar to 2019. So where are we getting the funds from? Have you, and your time, I think now we're over a month, but I know in the office itself, it's less time than that.
Right.
What can you share with us the liquidity, the health of national insurance?
Well, I cannot give you the specifics. That information I don't have right now. That would be forthcoming. I briefly met with the executives of the board yesterday, and we just went through formalities, the responsible for each one of the executives. I did meet with the managing director of the National Insurance Board about 2 weeks ago, who submitted a report, you know, handing over notes to the new government, what the position is, what are priority issues that have to be dealt with in the short term until there's a new board in place and we have an exact position on where the fund is. As for the state of the National Insurance Board, without specifics, I will say this, and this ain't anything new. If you have tens or probably hundreds of millions of dollars going on the figures from the previous government, with regards to monies that are paid out, with a significant decrease in revenues, that put a severe strain and pressure on the fund itself. And so, until I have, you know, the exact information, I don't want to just be out calling numbers off my head, but I'll make myself available once in possession of that information to give it to you. So probably on another show, I'll be in a better position to discuss that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and thank you for that, because I think we all want to know how healthy it is, right? We've heard, you know, just I think last year, talk of the need to increase contributions to help, you know, level us off, to bring some sort of liquidity back to it.
Right.
And what is it? Have you guys, and I don't know if in your discussions so early, has that been presented to the table?
Well, it has. We have glossed over it, to be quite honest, with the managing director and even with the executives in terms of getting an exact position when we look at what had happened.
Hello? Did we lose the minister just now? Minister, are you there? Okay, I think we may have lost the minister just now. And Kermit, let me know if we did lose the minister there for a second so we can see if we can get him back. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahasha Black. Let's see if we can go ahead and get the minister back on the line. We will be back right after this because that's a great question. I think that we would love the answer to. We'll be back right after.
Can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns? Where they hiding the drugs? Who shoot who? Who part of which gang? Or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles?
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas. And everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
The Water and Sewage Corporation advises the public and its customers that the corporation will commence improvement works on Bamboo Boulevard, South Beach East, beginning Friday, September 3rd, 2021, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily for a period of 8 weeks. During this time, there may be some interruption in water supply and traffic flow around the work area. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience caused.
Have you heard about the COVID vaccine raffle? If you are vaccinated against COVID-19, you can enter to win amazing prizes like food store gift certificates, hotel stays, beach excursions, and so much more. Even if you are previously vaccinated, you can still enter to win. The COVID vaccine is free, safe, and protects you from severe COVID-19 infections. Don't delay. Get vaccinated today and enter to win. Visit www.vaxbahamas.com to register.
You have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas@scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
You have to be strong in today's world.
Strong.
Keep your focus and
up.
What you believe in, how to achieve all your dreams.
Hey.
Keep moving forward. Never accept less than who you are.
Live your best life.
Hey. Be strong and free. It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
Hey.
With Nahasha Black.
Hey.
It's the Hit Back.
And we're back. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahasha Black, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Again, hope that everybody's doing well, taking care of yourself, living your best life today. I've got special guests joining us, Minister Miles Larota, Minister of State in the Office of the Prime Minister with responsibility for National Insurance and the National Insurance Board and for Disaster Recovery, the Ministry of Disaster Recovery and Preparedness. Minister Larota, thank you. We had a little technical glitch there, but I'm happy that you're back.
No problem. As I was saying, in our brief discussions with regard to the fund moving forward. You know, options are out there. One would be to raise the amount of premiums that are going to be paid, whether we're going to raise the age of workers to 67 in some areas, or even to 65 in corporations or departments where the age is 60. So these are things not inked in stone, but discussions have been had or suggestions have been made for the viability of the fund down the road. Mm-hmm. That's the best I could say on that right now, Nahaja.
Yeah, no, and I think it'll be interesting, when that is, if or when that is determined. Something else that was mentioned, and I want to talk about the verification, the news that are for the verifications that have happened, unverified NIB pensioners, up to more than 9,000 unverified pensions that were suspended by the previous administration were recently resumed, and this is in our by Jasper Ward in The Guardian this morning. Mm-hmm. Let me get a sense from what was the decision on that? What was the move on that? And is that something that we can, you know, let me go with that. Just starting with that. What was the move on that?
Nahash, I think there was a little miscommunication. The suspension actually happened after the election. So it would have happened during the this party's present government administration.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's just below 10,000. So to say around 9,000, I think it's closer to 10,000 than 9,000. Uh-huh. And as I said to the press yesterday, that the government was very displeased in that position. You know, pensioners are a vulnerable group. A lot of them, the individuals who are working, are now receiving, you know, less pay while their expenses have gone up in most circumstances. And so the decision to suspend those accounts, you're very negatively affecting one of our most vulnerable groups. You know, most people, you know, retire at the age of 60 or 65. And so to just cut off their income, especially when there is no switch on button to say 20 minutes to say, they're back up again.
Yep.
Was really a concern. And I think what was just as bad as the decision to suspend was not to notify the government of what was going to happen. That decision, my advice that there was a decision in July to suspend, and again in August to suspend those pensions.
Unverified, right.
But they were not done. And yet, during the first few days of an administration, we are hit with that news, some 10,000 people are going to be adversely affected.
And that this is, you're saying, if you're just sending in Minister Miles Larota, so you're saying that the newly minted government did not expect for the suspensions to happen right when you entered?
No. Let's put it this way. It would have been fair if that decision was going to be made to at least warn the government what the situation was, and that the Minister of Finance, who is also the Prime Minister, would have some decision on whether it was yea or nay. A fair question could be, what stopped the suspensions in the month of July and August? Mm-hmm. What has
and this been? This is our National Insurance Board. You're talking about it,
yes.
In regard to the board's decision to suspend now.
Yes.
When they did. So, what I'm hearing from you, Minister Larota, is that okay? This was something where you felt you were blindsided, but now you're reinstating. It was the suspension valid?
Let's put it this way. The reason that was given to me was that there were numerous attempts to make it easier for our pensioners to, the affected pensioners, to verify their accounts, that steps were taken that, apart from the stringent requirements that required you to present yourself to the board with ID to sign off that you are, in fact, alive and you are who you say you are, that there were measures that were taken under the former administration that allowed for pastors or GPs to verify that these individuals were who they say they were.
Correct.
Okay. So that was the reason that was given, that these individuals had ample time and were given lesser restrictions with regards to them verifying their accounts to continue their receiving their benefits, and that the board had made that decision that they were going to suspend, because notwithstanding the board's position to lessen the requirements, that there are some of 10,000 people still had not complied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was communicated to me.
And now that we've reinstated them, so these are unverified persons, and there's a purpose for verification, right?
Absolutely.
There's a purpose for it, right? That we want to make sure that persons are legitimately, you know, whom they say they are, that we're not, you know, because we've had some issues before with some misappropriation, and not from within the NIB, I'm not saying that, but from persons who may be collecting, who shouldn't be collecting, et cetera.
Right. No, I understand on the face of it, Naj, I think the blindsided came in because a decision was made and the government, the new government, wasn't informed.
Mm-hmm.
Officially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the present prime minister, if given that information, could have decided, okay, we could do this, and hold off for another month or another couple of weeks until we send out one last request that there are individuals out there who are not, and we're going to give you this opportunity to get your verification in order. Let's look at this. And I'm not making excuses, but we live in a time of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Where there are a large segment of this society, especially the aged and the infirm. So it's fair to say that individuals who are at their retirement age, and I'm sure that a lot of those individuals are beyond the age of 65, probably in their 70s or even 80s, probably to a lesser extent, they are living with health challenges. You know, there are comorbidities. There is a genuine fear that you are going out, even if you just go in to see your GP or to your pastor, that there is a disease out there that's ravishing and is taking lives. We're not just talking about being home for a few days and given some medication and that you'll be fine in the morning. But the decision of the to present themselves in this environment could actually be deadly.
And Agreed. And so now we should make some sort of, strategic moves to ensure that persons can get verified easily.
Absolutely. I mean, you look, the COVID pandemic have exposed a lot of weaknesses in our systems, including our health systems and in terms of our government system. But it has also provided other avenues that have caused Bahamians at large to be innovative. I mean, you look at how the talk shows are functioning, you look at how people are working remotely. Bahamians have this ability to adjust. You throw us lemon, we make lemonade. And while I do not condone the willful disobeying or non-compliance with regards to verification, I think some credit should be given to the fact if you see a situation in such great numbers that there could be a position that's in unity, because I'm sure these 10,000 individuals did not know, not all of them know each other, but for some reason you're getting the same result, that it was a viable reason.
Let me ask you something else. We're just sitting in Minister of State, Miles LaRota, joining us on the show. I have to ask this now. Where we are at present, the news is buzzing. One of the things that's a big deal is pension.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to ask you, because, of course, civil servants, not just civil servants, but, you know, my mother is a pensioner.
Uh-huh.
And I'm curious, do our civil servants get their pensions through NIB?
Well, the civil servants, the vast majority of them, receive a retirement benefit from the National Insurance Board. And then they would get their pension from the government or through their various departments, which will probably be paid through the Treasury. Now, the retirement benefit from NAB is not as high as in the private sector, because in a lot of cases, those civil servants are not paying as much as individuals, into the fund. When I say paying, contributing into the fund as much as private citizens. They have two benefits. One is the retirement benefit from NIB, and the second would be their pension from the government.
Yeah, okay. And, I don't know if you can answer this for me. One of the other things that's a big issue today that's in the airwaves, Minister LaRota, is the fact that is it possible? This has been a debate, what we call double dipping.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to get your thoughts on it, right?
Uh-huh.
As someone who, I'm sure that you will see this as your tenure as the Minister of State for NIB, that
uh-huh.
sort of conflict.
Uh-huh.
But if we have we have retirees on pension, and we're bringing them back, reinstating them, what has been revealed to the media is that, the administration, the present administration, is now reinstating the ability for persons who are being brought back to work off of retirement, the ability to go ahead and keep their pension and plus be paid. Is that, your thoughts on that?
I will put it this way. I note with concern that three individuals were mentioned who were PSs who were brought back. This practice is not new, and as a matter of fact, I could go down a laundry list of individuals who were brought back into the public service, and that was the will of former prime ministers past. We could look at the secretary to the cabinet. You could talk about financial secretary, permanent secretaries, senior advisors, registrar general, directors. I don't want to call individuals' name and bring them in there, because if they're asked to serve in a capacity by a new government, I don't think that they should be embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's rich that the past government is raising certain issues when there is so much proof out there, from the judiciary to the finance to other government departments, that these individuals were there on the payroll or were called in to further serve their country, despite the fact that they had retired.
Do you think, and I'm from neither one, right? My position is, okay, but we're financially strapped.
Uh-huh.
And I think one of the things that is known to all, and the former administration came in with the same mantra that we are, remember the cupboards are bare. We are are now in a real financial crisis, and many Bahamians say, how can we afford this? Why are we making room? What about younger professionals that, why are we bringing back folks who have retired? Are we saying that there's no one else who can fulfill that job? And then on top of that, can we not make a better arrangement if you have to bring someone in? How does this work for us trying to get out of a financial crisis?
Okay, Nahaja, let's be practical. On its face, it's a fair argument, and I would be one to advocate of succession planning. Mm-hmm. I'd be the first one to say that, you know, others should be given an opportunity, that no institution is to be solely for one person to serve. I would note, though, that a civil service that have 25,000-26,000 people in it, if the knock is going to be that three individuals came back, or even five individuals or 10 individuals, even though we could point to these situations, let's look at the number as compared to individuals that there. Is there three or four or five or 10? Going to be a difference that the Bahamas is going to suffer dire financial strain? That's
well, depending on the pay plus pension, it could be. I mean,
it's good for the politics. The reality is PLP governments and FNM governments have decided that there are certain individuals that they are going to re-engage for whatever reason. It could be a special skill set. It could be that the Prime Minister or members, senior members of the cabinet, have decided that these are individuals that they would prefer to work with them for, could be a short period of time or an extended period of time.
And it brings to question then, and if you're just sitting in, Mr. Miles LaRota, again, thank you, Mr. LaRota, for joining me on the show. It brings to question then, right? And I hear you, folks. This is something that happens across government. But I will say this, Minister LaRota, that many Bahamians will say, and this is a policy, an unsung policy that many don't like. Because if you have, and this is an argument where I, you know, I speak to civil servants who are very well educated. We don't have a bunch of, apart from what is, you know, the picture painted, we have a lot of very smart, intelligent, well-rounded Bahamians that are working in civil, as a public servant. Right? So that leaves the question of, are we doing this to ensure that our friends or family or our people are sorted out? Or do we really believe that someone who was retired and they've been out of leadership or out of position 4 or 5 years can come back today in the same position and give you that level of work that they had before? If the answer is yes, Minister LaRota, I argue too that our systems are not progressive. If someone leaves out of a company and comes back and can continue right where they left off, I wonder, has the company in itself changed at all? And I wonder, you know, are we ready to stop the trend? And this is the argument for many Bahamians, regardless of if it's FNM or VLP. I think the argument is worth, or the presentation of the argument is worth reconsideration. And it isn't just three or four or five, because I would argue, too, with that, is that we already have a bloated government. We already know that this is one of the concerns, that this is our continued expense, recurring debt. So should we not be trying to streamline rather than adding to? Your thoughts?
You make a fair point, Nahasha. There's some other realities out there, that there are individuals who are at lower levels, not PS or even undersecretaries, but in some cases, not even managers, who are re-engaged in government departments because they have a special skill set. It's a sexy topic to go at the permanent secretaries or even the higher-ups, but I could guarantee you that there are individuals who are functioning in the civil service in government entities who are not senior managers, but are brought back because of their expertise. It's not sexy to mention them because the argument then, well, you know, they are not interfering with the promotion system in the country. They're not holding anybody from achieving promotions. But it's the same argument, ain't it, that you are re-engaging individuals who provide value or who has the ability to provide a service, even though their time has passed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is good. It makes for good political banter to zero in on the PSs. But can we say that we have a system where only executives are given extensions? And I can tell you from experience that no, it's not.
Not only no. Well, I realize even in the judiciary, and the question will come back to. And I don't want to belabor this because, of course, my position is that we need to just cut it all the way. Just stop it.
I don't live in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
I hear these arguments, and there are points to be made on either side. Okay. In some cases, and I'm not speaking, that there are individuals. If we have a situation that we want to be addressed, then all of a sudden age is not a factor. So if you have a situation where your life, your freedom, other important things that happen to you or your loved one, then you just want the job done.
Indeed.
A lot of times, favor is a subjective thing. And so when we look at, we can make idealistic positions, but can we say that somebody could be at the top of their craft at 59 and 364 days, and on day 365, when they become 65 or 60, depending on what, that they should be discarded?
No, and that's not the argument for me. The argument isn't ageism. It isn't that. It is now, at this point, what can we afford to do? And if we're talking about both pension, you've retired now. You've retired. You've left. You could have retired. You've come to work at 18, retired 35 years later. You're in your 50s, late 50s, early 60s, however that works out. And you still, of course, have more to give. You're not dead. You're not decrepit. You are still a human being with more to give.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things where we as a society, okay, if rules are set, right? If we're government should not be your number one employer. I think we all know that from an economic strategy.
100%.
Yes, it should not be your number one employer. It leads to too many things and issues such as the, you know, corruption, cronyism, too much control with government, with a leash, right, to feed people. So I believe, Minister LaRota, that one of the things that should be important is that we create the steps of succession. And if we bring a retiree back, there has to be some understanding of cost. I was having this discussion with my friend and former co-host and colleague, Levin Miller, today. Here's the argument that the discussion that we were having is that if you come in, and this is, and I think it's something that you guys may have done before, or the former administration, one of the two, but that, let's say, for example, your pension is $21,000 a year. Let's say that you made $42,000 and that was half of it when you were working. Why can't we just say, all right, instead of whatever you were making previously, let's say the $42,000 plus your pension, we put your pension on hold and you make the $42,000, but you can't get both. I think that's fair.
No, Harsha, like I said, I don't live in a bubble. That's a fair argument. But what you're balancing that with, usually your pension is something that you have earned, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You would have earned because you would have put in the time and you would have gotten that.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, if the government has decided that they are going to re-engage you, mm-hmm, and you are doing a task, should you not be rewarded for that? I understand the other part. There are two competing arguments, and depending on which side of you on, I definitely understand that person on the street who has left the service, who is now on a reduced income, and is forced to survive on what the system say they should have, and that is now contrasted by individuals who these people will point to, say, look here, they made more money than me, they had a good run where they were there, they were given cars, they were given phones, they were given this benefit, and now they are gone, but you're bringing them back and you're giving them the pension and you're giving, that is double dipping. I understand that.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, of course,
anybody for having that position, because it's a fair argument to take.
Minister Mazzarotto, listen, I can't wait for us to have another conversation. Hopefully, you know, once you've gotten all of the information you need to know about the liquidity of national insurance. Oh, and finally, before I do let you go, the other ministry you're responsible for, disaster preparedness and recovery,
mm-hmm.
have you guys determined a new director general?
That have not been decided as yet. An announcement on that would be coming very, very, very shortly.
I heard a whisper.
Yeah, there are whispers out there, but this is a small community. Your whisper is probably correct. on that, I spoke with the PS in that department today. We are planning a trip into Grand Bahama and Abaco in the upcoming days for me to get a ground assessment as to what is going on in Abaco and in Grand Bahama. So hopefully whenever we speak again, we can speak on those two topics.
Most definitely.
Just a phone call away. I try to make myself available, and I do believe in the public right to know certain things, to ask questions, and especially to put pointed questions to our leaders, and make a judgment for themselves based on the information that they've received, you know, what their position is.
Thank you so much, Minister Mazzarotto. I appreciate the time and, taking the questions. We look forward to more information now, because, of course, this conversation with regard to double dipping, with regard to cost, and government, the size of government is not going away.
I agree with you.
And, you know, you guys said your new day. You said you were new day.
It is a new day. Thanks, Nahaja. You have a good day.
You too. Take care. All right, you're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja, Black Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Hopefully we get back online in a few minutes, but we're going to go to news. When we come back, I want your thoughts on it. I've got my thoughts on this double-dipping initiative. I don't like it.
The call.
Well, I guess you guys got it. I don't like the double-dipping idea, and I definitely don't. I think we need better succession planning. It doesn't look good for the new government, the new day government. It does not look good. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black. We'll be back after this.
Of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Attention all students in grade 4 through 12. Do you think you know about money? Well, the Central Bank of the Bahamas is giving you a chance to prove it and win cash in the 2021 Get Money Smart Bahamas Video Essay Competition. Can you tell us why you think the Bahamian economy is an ideal model for digital financial services? If you can, just produce a short video submission before October 22nd and show us you are money smart. Cash prizes will be given in various age categories, but you must get your parents' permission to enter. For more information, visit www.getmoneysmartbahamas.com or see our post on social media.
Sugar, sugar, let's get sugary. Softer, smoother, and amazing skin, no. Sugar, sugar, we're the sugar ladies. Giving you skin soft as a baby's. Goodbye. take good care of you.
Come visit us at Bahar Tree Spa on East Bay Street. Contact us at 323-6711 or visit us online at www.baharetree.com.
You have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas at scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
COVID-19. Do not panic. Be prepared. Some persons may get worried and feel stressed whenever there's an outbreak of diseases like COVID-19. Do not panic. It is better to be informed and prepared. Talk to a healthcare professional about your concerns. Make a plan for how you will keep your home and workspace clean and disinfected. Practice proper hygiene and preventative actions such as proper hand washing and coughing and sneezing etiquette. Stay informed about local COVID-19 updates from trusted and reliable sources.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas at scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
Back. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black, Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. We are doing this old school way. If you're trying to follow us online, YouTube, Facebook, we are offline today due to some technical issues, but we will be back tomorrow. So yesterday, we had a great show yesterday with Dr. Shankara Chetty. And, of course, it was a pre-recorded show. And so with it being pre-recorded, it had its own challenges. And, of course, we had the time difference and everything like that. So it was one of those shows that had to be recorded first. And so I'm actually glad that it was, because I got to sit back and watch, folks and their responses, and the response was definitely pivotal. The response was huge. And people want to know more. They want to know more about that 8-day protocol. They want to know more about alternative outpatient treatment. But we also have had, and when I tell you, it was a great experience chatting with him, and he has agreed to show up tomorrow at 10 p.m. his time, 4 p.m. our time, to chat with us and to do a question and answer period with us. So it is something there that is really exciting to watch and to see. I know we have Dr. Kevin Bethel. Hopefully we'll get him on the line, 325-4529, I think that is the number, and we'll get him on the line. We got Dr. Susan Williams Lockhart on the line as well. Doc, are you there?
Yes, I'm here right now.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Doc, what did you think of Dr. Chetty's eight-day protocol yesterday? What did you think about what he's been doing in South Africa?
Well, first of all, I think the man is obviously a hero. You know, the man, because when I listen to what the background of someone, because, you know, people, there are no overnight wonders. There's no, you know, overnight success. So when you hear the background of him, this man was impeccably trained in virology. I think he told me molecular biology. I think biochemistry, all these sort of scientific degrees that nobody except a total science nerd would go and do. And then not being able to get a job because nobody knew, well, why would you do all those things? And then going to do medicine and putting all those things together with medicine solidly. And so this helped him. And hearing that he went to this town that was mostly white and had to fight apartheid to get in there. So I think the man was like, I already done fight apartheid. They're threatening to blow me up, kill my children, burn my house. What's COVID? You know, I could deal with that. And so I think, you know, he is indeed a gentleman and a scholar, but he also is as well a very committed clinician. He cares, obviously, you know, and he's not intent for personal gain or aggrandizement. I get that impression very firmly with him, that he really cares and is trying his best to help people in. But he said the closest hospital to him is 35 kilometers. Now, I don't know, I can't remember my thing in miles, but that's quite a couple of miles, at least a good hour, maybe more than that, depending upon the state of the road away. So he
and I think we kind of lost Doc there for a second. But, you know, I am with, in terms of just that position alone, what Dr. Chetty has been able to do has been something of a miracle. I want to get your thoughts on it. I want to get you guys to call in and tell me your thoughts on what you thought about the show yesterday. And really to get a sense of how do you think, what when you heard what he said about this eight-day protocol, it's a hyperallergenic, hypersensitivity reaction. I want to get you guys to give me your thoughts on it, 325-4259, or text us at 422-4796, 325-4259, or text us at 422-4796. Dr. Susan Williams Lockhart joining us, and hopefully Dr. Kevin Bethel of Grand Bahama, who's also been doing some wonderful things there with COVID-19. You're back, Dr. Lockhart? Okay, good.
I'm back, yeah. Like I said, I thought Dr. Chetty was a marvelous man, a good human being, and somebody who's really trying. In the absence, he's one person, and he sat up and said he's going to make the difference. So first of all, I think his qualifications are very impeccable. He is trained in the things of which he is speaking about. It's almost as if, you know, he was prepared for such a time like this because you need virology, you need microbiology, you need molecular, all these other things that he has. We study those things in medical school, we do, but not to the depth and the extent of it. And I want to say that he started off, his protocols are very sound. The first thing he talks about is keeping himself safe. And this is particularly so because so many health practitioners have gotten ill, some have even died, where he talks about the benefit of sunlight and fresh air. Because COVID is a respiratory virus. You know, last week we were speaking, and for the first time I heard the Minister of Health talk about having a negative pressure treatment room in one of the clinics. And maybe that was on the works before, maybe he just said it. But to me, that's one of the first times I've heard a person in a power position of power say we need to deal with the air, you know, because COVID is a respiratory virus. So when you saw those drone shots of his clinic in the air, sunlight, everything is open and wide. That's the safest place for both patients as well as for clinicians so that they do not contract or get COVID itself. So that's the first thing. He's doing the first thing, which is trying to prevent. And then when you that fails, now you go on to the treatment. So I think Dr. Bethel, actually, because I credit Dr. Bethel with some very good internists, because I'm a surgeon and I'm an intensivist. I'm not a COVID doctor. I came to COVID, as I said, because no one would see patients at home. Nobody would treat them. And these were doctors' relatives. And my friends called me and colleagues called me saying, but my colleagues got ill. And they said, you know, will you come? Well, what are you going to do? Say, well, I'm scared. I'm not going. No, you go. That's what you do. But I had to get help. And one of the first people I credited, the first person who took me to one of my COVID cases was Dr. Kevin Bethel. Because Dr. Shetty's seven-day protocol lies in Dr. Bethel divides COVID into four stages, and I hope he comes on, he can explain it better. But he talks about the phase of attachment and early viral replication, then late viral replication. And then once you pass the point, the virus now gets to a point in a place where it overwhelms the body system. And then now you're going into the early cytokine phase. And then you have the late cytokine phase. And then you have the long COVID phase. So when I listened, I said, you know something? He's talking about, when Dr. Shetty talks about the dime turning on day eight, he's just talking about what now happens when COVID moves from becoming localized, you know, in the upper respiratory system to becoming now a systemic illness going down into the lungs. And that typically tends to coincide, I believe, with the increase of the numbers of the COVID, increase in the numbers of COVID particles as it divides, as the COVID beats up the immune system, because the immune system has to jump on it and curtail it so it does not go anywhere. And typically, day eight could be that sort of turning point. And then you have key references, allergic reactions, but really and truly, allergy and inflammation are sort of two sides of the same coin, I would say. Again, you know, because allergy is a type of a hypersensitivity reaction, and they are categorized by inflammation. All inflammation is, if I were to say it, inflammation has been around for a long time, from in the time of Caesar, where it was described by Galen, who was an emperor who was a physician to the emperors, and he said inflammation is just the body's response to injury or infection. If you hit your thumb, it gets red, it gets swollen, it gets painful, it gets warm, and you can't use it. So those characteristics of rubor, which is redness, turgor, which is swelling, calor, which is heat, dolor, which is pain, and then functiolactia, which is loss of function, have been around from Galen and those Jews who I'm talking about a long time, right? So inflammation is known, and it's there. So when he talks about inflammation, quote, allergy, we do some of the similar things, because when you're talking about that whole inflammatory pathway being released, then what is happening? The inflammatory pathway is meant to cause whatever is causing the problem to stay in one place. But when it's spread, right spread, that's when you get the issue. So you're going to get the cytokines being released. That's what he talks about, the leukotriene. That's when he talks about the platelet activating factors and the clotting. You have histamine and bradykinin, and all of these are other things that is like a massive storm, and it sort of overwhelms the body.
Did you understand it? If you're just tuning in, hit back with Nahaja Black, Dr. Susan Williams Lockhart. We're talking about yesterday's show with Dr. Shankara Chetty from South Africa and his eight-day protocol. Did you understand did it connect, did it relate to you when he spoke about the symptoms of these cascading symptoms that we're treating the...
Yes, and what he's saying is very true. Now, he has the advantage of two things. One, I think his patients must be marvelously compliant. He tell them, come back, and they come back the day he tell them, come back. He
tells
them, do this, and they do it. I'm like, boy, he needs to come up in here. By the time some of our patients have seen us, they already talked to three Obia man, right?
Yes.
Bubba
around
the corner, the two pharmacists, the man selling the red and black pills, and maybe two other physicians, many of them, because they're trying to help themselves. Plus, they've bought their bush and done some other things as well, too. So by the time, and it's difficult, he's talking about that day eight. Sometimes you don't get that from people. You know, they're not able to tell you. And so, you know, he has the luxury. I mean to say, it's also it's a responsibility that he's the only person seeing all these people. So he has an ability to see, okay, what are the trends? We are a varied population. I may see some, you may see some others. And it's only as we started talking, we realized that, you know, we were having similar experiences, right?
Yeah.
Part and parcel of it is that the treatment, the official documented treatment, for COVID is not that. It's not saying that's what it is. Some of the things they use, like they will use steroids for it, you know, either orally or in the lungs. They'll give you steroids as a nebulizer or as an aerosol. But many of them, they will give you some vitamins maybe, but many of the other protocols which are being used and shown to be used successfully are not endorsed by the WHO. And so many people who treat COVID, quote-unquote, officially, they don't use what he's saying, which many of us in the private sector and who are dealing with patients, we do use them. You know, because we don't have anything else. You know, yep. I said my experience was when I called and said that the lady who starts is 87 or 86, what we could, the same man does quit, call us back when it's 76. That's good. You could hold it, lock up. You do what you got to do, man. Good. And I was
hold it. Whoa. But that's it.
Yeah.
And no protocols. Hold on. Let me welcome to the show Dr. Kevin Bethel from Grand Bahama.
Yeah,
who is also joining us. Dr. Bethel, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me back, Nahaja. Hello, Dr. Lockhart.
Hey.
Yeah.
Listen, it's a pleasure to have you both on the show. Both really holistic approaches, or both who have looked at COVID from a different viewpoint than many. Who've at least been outspoken about their different approaches. Dr. Kevin Bethel, it's a pleasure having you on the show again, because, of course, you were one of the first. Mm-hmm. When, and you know, you and I remember when you actually left to go to a different country, and I know you didn't expect COVID, but you then met it there, you learned, and when you came back in country, you had more experience than any doctor in country. At the time of
that was by accident, of course, but just serendipitously, it just so happened to be that way.
And I want to ask you. Yesterday, I know you had a chance to listen to Dr. Shankara Chetty's interview yesterday on the show. I wanted to ask you your thoughts on what he presented, and from the work that you've done over the past year and a half, going on 2 years with COVID and your patients in Grand Bahama. What were your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, I love the way he thinks. I can see the parallel, because he's a primary care doctor like myself that's has a broad base of scientific backgrounds in multiple disciplines. And so when you're cross-trained like that, you know, you have some training in economics. You apply, you know, I say like economics is like the biology of money, you know, so you apply the universal laws that just are throughout science in all fields. And all of a sudden what we saw with COVID was all of a sudden we were being asked to throw away all of the principles that we know to be basically laws of science and just pretend that somehow there's this new magical thing that we're supposed to, you know, not treat the way that we know that we should be treating it. And one of the first things that Dr. Chetty described is, he said, first thing you have to categorize is the symptoms and the sequence. And, you know, every virus has a prodrome, a lead up, an incubation time. Then it has an acute phase. And then if it is a virus that has damage, then it goes into a chronic phase or some other phase. So one of the first things I did is start to look at dividing up this disease into phases. And so I was glad to see that approach. Am I still on here?
Yeah, no, you're still good. You're still good.
Okay, yeah. So something chimed in on my end. So I really like that approach, because that's the way that we're taught as epidemiologists and virologists to look at these things, to really break it down. And because only then, when you break down the disease into its components, can you then begin to put down treatment. And one of the other things, the bones that I kept picking, I mean, I talked about treatment, you know, I said, you know, treatment, we have to identify treatments. But to back up, how do we find the treatments? I was saying, all right, well, you know, once we break up the virus into you know, different categories, but also we have to recognize that we can't confuse the term of what the virus is. The virus is actually SARS-CoV-2. So it's a coronavirus named SARS-CoV-2. The disease is called COVID-19. So the analogy that we can make in comparison is HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus, is the virus. But AIDS is the disease that sometimes results from the AIDS virus. But now that we know how to treat the AIDS virus, not everybody who gets AIDS virus gets AIDS. See, I use the term AIDS virus because this is the way that the news media, even, you know, trains us to name the virus after the disease. But really, the virus has its own name. So wow. You know, we have to separate, are we treating the virus or are we treating the disease? And that has to do with the phase of the actual illness.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. So, So that's why very early on I was like, okay, so we got the acute phase. So when you first come down with symptoms, the goal is to get suppress the viral load. So I started almost every one of my presentations talking about viral load and inoculation load and how those things, these are hard concepts really for lay, you know, people to necessarily understand, but they're really simple. It's just, it just makes sense. The more virus that you suck in when you first get infected, the more chances are that this virus is going to infect you and make you really sick. And the higher that the virus is allowed to replicate, the more number of viruses that's allowed to replicate in your body, the sicker you're going to get and the more chances that you are going to spread the virus because now you're, you know, shedding more virus. So I started off every presentation talking about that because that's phase one. That's the acute phase, dealing with the virus. But phase two, this immune dysregulation, the cytokine storm, it's been given many names, but that happens absolutely, like Dr. Shetty said, a week, like 7 days, right to the almost to the hour. People who thought that they were recovered from the acute phase, the virus, all of a sudden they went into this respiratory distress. And, you know, and sometimes they would literally think that they were over it, you know,
yes,
after about three or four. Yeah. Oh, I saw it over and over again. I kept warning everybody. I was like, no, we have to treat. Now, when we get to that 1 week phase, it's a different, we have to approach it differently because that's why I was trying to look at it and dividing it up into phases. Look at the phase that we're in, you know, and at that point, it's not really viral suppression that's the main goal because the virus has already had a full week at that point to replicate and produce massive amounts of the spike toxin. So it's not the virus itself that's actually killing people. It's the spike toxin that's accumulated to a threshold. Now, the issue is some people have a higher threshold. So any poison, some people have a higher threshold for alcohol consumption than others, right? Mm-hmm. Some of us are lightweights and some of us can, you know, drink the Hulk under the table.
That's right.
So everyone has a different threshold for things. So it just makes sense that there's some people that, you know, they're going to get sicker for whatever reason. And I really liked what Dr. Shetty was saying, that because what he was saying about predisposing factors, you know, this is a concept that we've all been trying to grapple with, you know, and you asked the question, Nahaja, you know, about, you know, how that comes into play, this concept
right.
of pre-existing conditions like diabetes and obesity and hypertension. And yes, they do seem to be predisposition, but I like the way that he answered it. And it, where those predisposing situations come into play is people have a more difficult time in recovering. If you already have illnesses of any type, you know, to your heart, your kidneys, your liver, diabetes, hypertension, those are already like weights around your ankles that, and you're trying to swim to catch air. Those weights are holding you down. So you have a harder time to recover.
Yeah.
So if we think of it from that point of view, because I think one of the things that happens a lot of times is that, you know, we might focus on treating, you know, the COVID pneumonitis, you know, the respiratory stuff, and forget that this person actually has diabetes and hypertension and those things, and not properly manage those. And then those things get out of control. And those things in and of themselves, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, those things are killers.
Yep.
So really, what is it that people are dying from in the hospitals? I mean, after being a month in the hospital, after having COVID, this particular virus, like I also said very early on, does not have the ability to go latent. It is not a type of virus that can cause latency, which is a way of with the virus hiding in your system for long, long periods of time. The spike toxin can stay in someone's body for a long time, but the virus itself goes through its acute replication phase and it's done. So what is killing someone a month later after being in the hospital? But it's all these other issues that aren't necessarily being properly managed because we still are trying to think, oh, this person has COVID.
Kind of time, if I can interject there, for what Dr. Bradley was saying, and just to conclude, the way I look at it is twofold. Number one, people who, we know that one of the main things, if you jump into that, whether you call it a hypersensitivity phase, whether you call it cytokine storm phase, it's inflammation. People who have those predisposing conditions, whether it's obesity, diabetes, hypertension, they already have a low-grade level of inflammatory changes going on in their body. So it's like a smoking underbrush that when you have the match of COVID, it's going to catch fire a lot more quickly. And I agree with what Dr. Bethel is saying as well. So it's not the live virus. The live virus is like a bomb, it's like a pilot dropping mines in a minefield. And the minefield, the spike proteins are there until, you know, the point in time when it's activated and it's going to cause all the different things happening with the body. COVID basically beats up the cells of the body and leaves them open to all the other effects of inflammation and ongoing cytokine storm. So I agree that one of the main things, and Dr. Shetty outlined it very well, and Dr. Bethel in his protocol, because, you know, as I said, I tell everybody, he's the person who took me through my first cases. Because that's not, and you couldn't get training from anybody else. You were just saying, okay, what did you do that worked? And he had seen the most patients at that point in time, I think, out of many people, maybe himself and a couple other ID people who taught a bit differently. But this is the thing. So to bring a change, you have to use the right. It's like you're using a fork to drink soup with. It's winter. That's what they like in our present policy, too. It's with well-intentioned people are trying, but with oxygen being expensive, unavailable, oxygen delivery devices being unavailable for the people. You need to keep people you need to catch them, as Dr. Shetty is saying, at day 7 and at day 3, them right on the ball so that they don't go into those undesirable conditions. Thanks a lot.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to go through some things that Dr. Shetty has said, and then I want to, you know, get you guys, you know, of course you, Dr. Susan Williams Lockhart, Dr. Kevin Bethel out of Grand Bahama. I want to get your thoughts on this biphasic thing, and what do you think when you hear where he says it's an allergic reaction? And then also I want to get your thoughts on the protocols. And Dr. Bethel, I know you have protocols as well, and I want to get your success rate in Grand Bahama. You're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. It's an interesting show, interesting day. We will be back right after this.
You have a new text message from Scotia.
Scotiabank is adding text messaging to its communication channels to keep customers updated in quicker and safer ways. As of November 4th, Scotiabank will be using text messaging to provide notifications on the minimum payment required for your credit card and due dates. Customers may continue to access their credit card statements on Scotia Online or through our mobile banking app. Learn more by contacting customercare-bahamas@scotiabank.com or call 356-1697.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
Have you heard about the COVID vaccine raffle? If you are vaccinated against COVID-19, you can enter to win amazing prizes like food store gift certificates, hotel stays, beach excursions, and so much more. Even if you are previously vaccinated, you can still enter to win. The COVID vaccine is free, safe, and protects you from severe COVID-19 infections. Don't delay. Get vaccinated today and enter to win. Visit www.vaxbahamas.com to register.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Back, you're listening to The Hit Back with Nahaja Black Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We're not on Facebook or YouTube today, but we are always here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Special guests joining me are two of my favorite physicians, Dr. Susan Williams Lockhart and Dr. Kevin Bethel from out of Grand Bahama. Welcome, Dr. Lockhart and Dr. Bethel. Thank you so much again for taking the time out and joining me on the show today. I want to ask you both. As we are, you know, yesterday, this, like, again, if you missed yesterday's show, you can go on Facebook, on my Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/NahajaBlackShow. You can go on my YouTube channel, type in Nahaja Black. You'll see the channel. The videos are there. You can also, of course, go to our website, Guardian website, and just look for all of the shows, the audio of all of the shows, and you want to get that show from yesterday. The reason why it was so powerful with Dr. Shankara Chetty, one of the things that we learned that he shared with my audience yesterday was that he has had over 7,000 COVID-19 patients, that he has had zero left, zero hospitalizations, and has no use for oxygen at all in his practice. The reason being is that he has found out, just in seeing his patients at the early onset of the COVID-19 pandemic in South Africa, was that it's seemingly this virus. He is now, he stands firmly that is on the eighth day you see this change, that it is a biphasic, and I want to make sure I have the wording right. He says, in essence, I found that COVID illness is a biphasic non-linear illness with little correlation between the two phases. He says the first phase consists of a typical self-limiting viral illness of varying severity affecting the respiratory tract and or the gastrointestinal tract. Most patients show signs of recovery by the sixth day from onset of symptoms. The second phase consists of an inflammatory process that occurs in a proportion of these patients and starts exactly on the eighth day from symptom onset 1 week later. This critical second process is triggered by a hypersensitivity reaction of varying severity and, if not addressed timely, progresses through hyperinflammation to hypercoagulability. Free spike protein is the trigger for this phase, and it's the primary pathogen of COVID illness, resulting in most, if not all, of the mortality and morbidity we have witnessed. He continues, I have currently treated, and this was written, now he says it's 7,000, but when it was written, this article, he said, I currently have treated over 6,500 patients with this perspective spanning three waves of this pandemic with the same outcome of no deaths or hospitalization, and have largely negated the need of any notable oxygen requirement by reversing the hypoxia. I want to get, and Dr. Bethel, I'll start with you. When you hear that, one of the things that you said was that you eighth day, or that 1 week later, it is you found that to be very much consistent with what you've seen in your practice. But what do you think of when he says it's a hypersensitivity reaction? Do you view it as such? Do you think that makes sense?
Well, yeah, we already know that there's a bradykinin release, there's interleukin release, and there's, without getting too technical, there's basically every one of us learns in medical school about the TH1 and TH2 immune pathways. So in the old days, they used to think that basically there was viral and bacterial infections, and we had the immune system would be activated in one of those pathways when we thought we had a virus, and the other pathway when our body perceived that we had a bacterial infection. What we recognized early on was with this virus, and it happens sometimes with other viruses, is they trick the body into thinking that there's a bacterial infection. So the inappropriate type of immune response is triggered off. But, you know, and it just keeps going. So it's multifaceted. So to boil it down simply, yes, we can call it an allergic type reaction, but, you know, I would say it's more than just an allergy in terms of too much of an antibody production or something like that. I look at it more as a sort of a hypersensitivity type reaction. And like I was saying before, everybody has the threshold to a toxin. So very early on, I started to stop calling it the spike protein and calling it the spike toxin, all right? Because we have to look at it that way, you know, and everybody has a different threshold to this toxin. You know, some people, right away, it'll trigger off allergy-like reactions, and with the tightening of the airway, almost like asthma. I mean, everyone is different. It can affect multiple organs in different ways, and each person is unique. And that's why it gets more difficult to treat someone when they get in that second week of illness. Yeah. And it has to be more individualized. But there are some universal principles, I think before the break, you were asking about success rate. So I keep track of, as best as possible, all of the COVID clients that I've dealt with in person or on the phone. And for every one of those people, they're usually the pinnacle case of a whole family of people that are sick with COVID.
Yeah.
So on average, I'd say, all right, if I have 700 people in my phone, I would multiply that conservatively by 2, but more realistically by 4. And that's how many COVID patients I've treated. And I can tell you that I've only had about 2 people end up in hospital. And most of the time it's because they're already in that second phase. They're already very sick. And wow. To be honest, they panic. Their family panicked and dragged them to the hospital. Even when I told them, I said, look, just hold tight. Give it a chance for the medicine to work. Some of them, one of them in particular, they didn't even fill the prescription yet that they had gotten from me. But when, they had a family conference meeting and, oh my goodness, Auntie so-and-so's got COVID. You best take her to the hospital. And they didn't even give her the medicine. So I can't really say that they actually were treated.
That's right.
The treatment was attempted. But but for people who have actually followed the protocol, I would say it's 99% sure that they're non-hospitalized.
Wow.
I do have oxygen concentrators that I will loan out for people that need oxygen. There are some interesting things, treatments that we can do that will very quickly bring someone's oxygen saturations up to normal. Even when they're down in the 70s. I had someone today who came into the clinic with an oxygen saturation of 78.
Wow.
All right. So very quickly, gave her some treatments. And when she left, it was 91, 92 on room air. But I said, no, I don't feel comfortable. And I still send her home in oxygen. But that's a remarkable improvement.
91 for someone who literally, from 78?
Yeah.
That's huge. Okay, now I have to ask the question. What was that treatment that you used? And I'll go through
it's a lot of the similar things what Dr. Shetty would use. I mean, we want to use an antihistamine. We want to use, because this person was clearly already in that immune dysregulation phase, gave her a dose of vitamin D, all right, as an immune stabilizer, and a dose of prednisone to quiet down that immune response.
Yeah.
I also gave her a dose of monoglucostat or Singulair, which is a similar to an antihistamine. And I gave her a dose of N-acetylcysteine combined with methylene blue. And that combination of N-acetylcysteine with methylene blue is amazing. I mean, what it literally does is it changes the way that the hemoglobin molecule is damaged from the COVID spike toxin so that it can no longer carry oxygen. And it repairs that damage on the hemoglobin so that it can then start being able to carry oxygen. So it's almost an instantaneous improvement in the oxygen saturations on the blood test.
Mm. Wow.
Dr. Juliet Hepburn, here in the Bahamas, was one of the pioneers in the research with methylene blue. Published papers in it, presented this information to the Medical Association of the Bahamas on our annual meeting last year. Mm-hmm. And yet, I don't understand why it isn't like widespreadly adopted.
I will comment on that because I don't have, I'm in awe at doctor. I have not seen 1,400 patients, definitely not. My categorization falls somewhere between 30 and 50. But I would say that very much so, following it very closely to what Dr. Shetty did, is basically you treat, from reading and understanding the pathophysiology of the disease, you treat for what will happen. And again, because we have not kept figures. When I say this, I don't believe that we have tallied and said, okay, you know, he has the advantage. Instead of being one person, everybody comes there, they're good and complacent, and the better has kept figures on his phone. But as a nation, I don't know that we have kept figures to know, okay, who is positive, who does not come, right?
Yes.
Because we don't know who isn't coming. Many people, I don't believe the figures, you know, and not with any disrespect to the people who are collecting them. They work very hard.
Yes.
But people are not going to do PCR testing. They're not going to do it. It's $120, $100, $130.
You're right.
They have that money. They're not going to do it. I know that my cousin has COVID. I went by him. The next thing I have sore throat, I can't taste, I can't smell. Why am I going to spend $30 to $120 to do a test? I'm not going to do it. Our positivity rate is 20. It's probably more like maybe 40%. I feel the way it's going that soon everybody in the Bahamas would have had COVID.
Yeah, so I think you're right.
So those figures,
yes.
COVID is merely becoming an endemic process. So we don't have an idea in terms of that. But my thing at the battle was one of the people who said, well, these are some of the protocols and you have some other places where you do it. And we always say to people, these are not proven or approved, but it's either going to go in the hospital or we'll try what we can try right now. And they say, doc, let's go. Not if the family is a doctor. You say, doc, this is what I need to do. You say, doc, let's go because, you know, we don't want the hospital can't help them because the system on the hospital is not, again, I'm not criticizing the hospital, no. Hospital is trying to be made to do what it was not meant to do. When you crowd the hospital, you overflood the system, it can't work. So you have to have some sort of viable alternative. And the third point before I let Dr. Bettel get in again is that, yes, Dr. Hepburn's therapy, that photodynamic and methane do definitely work. Because one thing, Dr. Shedd, one thing we have to understand, I'm in Nahaja very carefully, we are not Port St. Elizabeth. We had over, I think, 10, 15, 20,000 tourists who were primarily vaccinated coming in here and bringing COVID with them. The strains they brought were not normal strains. They were strains that were, I think, more deadly, more dangerous. And this is why we fell like we did in August, in the beginning of August. It was crazy. We talked about that last time. And my husband and I myself got ill as well. So what I would say that it's a different profile from that perspective in terms of the disease, the burden of disease, how the people will tend to live. But definitely I found that using that, the therapy with the light therapy and the methylene blue, it cuts the level of viral load. And so as a result of that, you know, and again, it's been studied and presented in Germany. It's an accepted therapy in Germany. Dr. Hepburn has some extensive work. I know she's talking up with some committees. Some of the people have done it. But in many cases, people are not wanting to talk because they don't want to get the backlash, you know, and people are going to say things about them. But I think, you know, listen, there's room at the table for everybody. You know, I say, let's sit together and see what works for us. I know some, works for us as a nation. Let's see what you have that might work. Let's see, like, you have that might work. And let's put together our own sort of treatment protocol to keep people safe and out of hospital. That's my thing.
My thinking of it is we don't have time for hurt feelings. You know what I mean? When I say that, I mean, if we have treatments that are, the hospital can't take more patients. Patients going into the hospital that is understaffed, where doctors and nurses are burnt out, where the morale is low. Patient care, as best as our physicians and our nurses would wish to give it, there's only so much energy that they have to give it. And so what I think is happening, too, is that a lot of people are saying, well, if I go to the hospital, I'm surely going to die. And so folks are staying home. If we have alternative outpatient treatment that will save lives at the beginning and the onset of this, then what are we doing? Why does it matter whose narrative it is? Big pharma. Listen, at this point, Dr. Lockhart and Dr. Bethel, I'm not interested in anything any other country is doing other than what we're doing. You know what I mean? That we have to save our people, and that means that we have to be very much, you know, seeking answers. Let me read some of these text messages before we go. We got a lot of text messages here. Let me see if I can get to a few. Let's see. We got a few text messages here, and I want to make sure I got all of them. But Nahaja, remember what Dr. Chetty said. He did an education campaign in the community to tell people how important the eighth day was. I think that's why they came back. They realized even though they might feel like this aloe is working great, if on day eight they got a headache, that's danger, Will Robinson. I like that. That's a good movie. That's why they came back. Education. All the former Minister of Health and the former Prime Minister did was tell us to behave ourselves. But I don't think that they knew. So
Someone says, hello, Nahaja. I respect and value Dr. Kevin Bethel's opinion and health scientific evidence of this virus and what happens. Then how do we cure and prevent COVID? Good work, Dr. Bethel. Thanks from the mayor of Grand Bahama, Mr. Rudolph Stubbs.
Rudy.
How do we prevent it?
Yeah.
Oh, Evan, you want to go?
Prevent it. You mean prevent it from where we are now, from you know, where do we go from here, sort of thing?
Yeah, I think where do we go from here? And I don't know if you can prevent COVID. I think it's here to stay. I mean, but how do we ensure that we're treating it and we don't have to?
Yeah, treatment. Early treatment. Yeah, we have to learn to treat and live with this thing. Dr. Lockhart used the word endemic. So that, you know, endemic means that it's something that's here. It's going to be circulating in the community indefinitely, right? And it'll be like the common cold eventually. When all of us have already been exposed to one of the variants of SARS-CoV-2, we will basically have enough immunity against all the variants that even when we get exposed to another variant, we might get a little mild case. And this includes the vaccinated people, right? Or the people that have been previously infected. You may catch it a second time down the road with some new variant, but it won't be the deadly thing. So we have to get to that point where we can live with this thing. So how do we get there from where we are now? Well, we have to have an aggressive educational campaign which explains to people the process of the illness. So one of the first things I tell people, I said, break it down real simple. There's three phases to this illness. There's 1 week of incubation where you have no symptoms from the day you were exposed to the first day of symptoms. And then I nail down the first day of symptoms, not the first day of coughing, the first day they felt unwell.
That's what
from
Dr.
that
Kevin
day
said, right
on to the eighth day is when the respiratory stuff starts. And I do tell them, I said, so yeah, I tell them where they are in this process and what to look out for. And exactly that 1 week, we got to get you through that 1 week mark, that eighth day. Once you get through that and you don't have any recurrence of symptoms or worsening of symptoms, you're pretty much home free. You just continue with the treatment. We don't need to do anything else. But if you develop new symptoms at that point, you need to come back because you're going to need additional treatment. So we need to basically have packages of medicines that we give out to people. You know, I mean, like literally, like, so here's a bone to pick. I mean, maybe I'm a purist on things, but nobody comes to my clinic and gets tested for COVID and gets sent away without the offer for one of the doctors in our clinic, in our group, to consult with them and their family. If they, you know, a lot of people may come here because we're not the only testing place on the island, obviously. So, you know, they may just happen to come here and they have another doctor, but they have to say, no, I will go and see Dr. So-and-so. Great. Here's a letter to take to your doctor. Make sure you go and get treatment. But that's not what happens. I can't tell you the number of people.
You get tested, you're positive, but negative,
and they get told. Yeah, they get told that, you have COVID. And then they say, what must I do? I don't know.
I don't know.
Some Tylenol. And if you feel like you could die, then go to the hospital. That's all they're told.
But that's all we've ever been told. And that's what's so frustrating.
Yeah, but that's not right. There's so much that we could be doing. So we have to roll out these treatment packs. You know, I suggest enough to treat four people because the average family size is four. A lot of families are larger than that. But basically, you get it out there, put the treatment protocol that's used for someone who's actually got symptoms versus someone that's in the house, probably in that incubation phase that we're trying to prevent from getting the symptoms is slightly different, but the medicines are basically the same at that point because you're working on trying to suppress the virus enough that they don't get the symptoms in the first place, or if they already got symptoms, suppress the virus so they don't get onto the full immune dysregulation form of COVID.
I need to ask this question because we're running out of time. But what we've been seeing, Dr. Bethel and Dr. Lockhart, is that we've been seeing a lot of pregnant mothers succumbing to COVID-19. And I gather that is because they're now in the second phase, right, this spike toxin phase. And I'm wondering, can the stuff like the Montelukast, the prednisone, all of these things, are they things that someone who's pregnant, a pregnant woman can take? What would you say to a pregnant, to a mother who is, you know, with COVID? And because this is very scary for a lot of people.
Well, I would say to that, you know, I had experience of treating a pregnant lady. It was scary. We did it in conjunction with her OBGYN because she had COVID, was diagnosed, and was told, you know, well, go home. And then she wasn't. And so we essentially had to go in there. We did give her some prednisone and some treatment that you can give in pregnancy, but you have to be careful because you are dealing with two patients, not one, the mother and the child, and you have to deal with both of them. So it was very tough with her. We had to spend a lot of time with her, you know, help her through it. She went to hospital twice and was sent back home both times. And basically, but she made it through. She delivered a healthy baby boy. So it can happen. But again, as you were saying, and as Dr. Bethel was saying, you have to have people committed. I've done when I'm thinking about it, 30 before and then 30 after with the new protocol that I'm doing. So nearly up to 100 people. And again, once people follow the protocol, they've been okay. I think in all that time, some people I had to send to hospital when I saw them because they were far advanced, past 38. But I think certainly education has to do with there being consensus. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so far what has happened is that the competent authorities, there has not been consensus on alternative treatment to keep people out of hospital, you know?
Yes.
Even Remdesivir, which again is not really shown to work that well as far as I understand, something you have to give in hospital because it's an intravenous infusion.
So, and expensive, just for the record.
So I think that it has to be, and again, my thing is, you want to be careful, though. I heard you saying, you know, we have to do things. But I would say, again, strike a note with caution. You have to do things carefully in a way. And maybe, as I said, when you have a question in stance, what do? You do a trial. Why don't you try or do a trial ourselves and say, that's the Bahamas trial. Let's try this protocol in the Bahamas.
Let's just try
set it up. And it's because the government has the clinic. Most people go to the government clinic. They don't have money for a private doctor, many people, you know. And some people who do, they're not. So why don't we run a trial on some of the treatments and see, okay, let's try it and see what happens. And then we can say, okay, we found that this works, and maybe we can come up with a... So some places, like a state in India, Uttar Pradesh, I think, they tried with one particular medication, and they're now, quote-unquote, COVID. So when you look at their chart on the World Health Meter, you don't... The symptoms are down. My thing is, don't accept somebody's word for it. Let's run a trial ourselves. Let's try do that and see what happens.
Let me do this. We have to go. I mean, it's amazing how time flies. But I want each one of you, please give your number, contact information. I'm sure people want to find out exactly, you know, hey, I need this protocol. I think I was down this day, and I need help. Okay, so let's start with you, Dr. Lockhart. How can folks reach you?
They can go online and look at me, Dr. Stuart Cathart, Health and Wellness, or look up my name, Dr. Susan Williams Lockhart, or they can text me. I say text because I may not answer every call. 806-0199. WhatsApp 0199, and I normally try to answer and tell people to, and I try as much as possible to use people's own positions. I tell them, you know, okay, and try and see, and if that is not working, then I can say, okay, this person or that person, and that's all. People have to try help themselves, you know, just trying to help.
Dr. Bethel, your contact information?
Yeah, I think the best is to call the clinic. We have a staff here that can schedule a consultation on the phone, if they're not on Grand Bahama, 351-5424.